from KQED.
This is Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. Great white sharks are disappearing from California waters and should be protected under the U.S. Endangered Species Act. That's according to a petition which was filed last week by a number of environmental groups, in fact, three of them. And we want to discuss the proposal in this forum segment, find out what is threatening the sharks and whether they belong on the list of endangered species. And it might be important to add here what I had said earlier, which is that there are many people who are, of course, well, you don't have to go back to Jaws, the Peter Benchley novel and movie, to realize that there are many people terrorized by sharks, understandably so. And yet they are vital to our ecosystem. And as predators and as part of the ecology, they are vitally necessary. So I want to bring David McGuire on, who is one of those who has instituted this petition. It was instituted by three environmental groups, Shark Stewards, Oceana, and the Center for Biological Diversity. And David McGuire is a marine biologist and founder of the nonprofit Shark Stewards, one of the environmental groups filing this petition. Good to have you here.
Great to be on the show, Michael. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you for joining us. We're going to be joined by some others who I'll introduce in just a moment as soon as we bring them aboard. But I want to begin by finding out, well, I guess a lot of the filing of this petition had to do with some new research.
Yeah, that's true. Well, as you said, you know, it's Shark Week. And
did we lose connection? All right, I'm sorry, we lost you there for a moment. Go ahead.
Yes. Well, you know, we're familiar with our local population off the Gulf of the Farallones and the Central California coast, but white sharks are not widely distributed. They're actually in hot spots, and there's a recent study that was just published that suggests that the population of adult and subadults between the California population and off Guadalupe, Mexico, numbers less than 400. So the population is far less than we considered, and we know historically that it's declined from what it once was, and that globally these sharks have declined significantly.
Well, the ones in California and Baja down in Mexico also, we should add here, are genetically distinct. I mean, they grow slowly, they mature late, they reproduce few. And in fact, there are, what, about maybe 100 reproducing females from your counts or the research we have?
Well, that's what it's suggested, the level of mature adults around the Farallon Islands, somewhere around 100. It's not exactly established, and about the same off of Guadalupe, actually probably smaller off Guadalupe. The number of young adults and young of the year, they're called down in Southern California Bight, are not well known. They're more difficult to quantify. So it's kind of hard to know, but it's surprising actually with this new data how small this population is. And a lot of that really, as you suggested, that this is this distinct genetic population. And that's really what led to this filing of this petition, trying to get this population designated as a distinct genetic population under the Endangered Species Act.
And yet a lot of this has to do with, well, gill nets, sharks being caught in gill nets and caught for shark fin soup, which is a subject that we've focused on here on Forum. What about just having more stringent fishing limits or the fact that a lot of sharks are really being affected by, well, contamination and coastal development, things like that, acidification in the ocean?
Well, Michael, you just named the list. There are a number of threats to these sharks, and overfishing historically has been a dramatic cause for decline, as well as a dramatic decline in prey items, namely elephant seals and sea lions.
But excuse me, David, the reason I mention all those threats is one could argue that more needs to be done in all those areas, that's really the problem.
Exactly, and I think, you know, recognizing that this is a small population, that it is at risk, not only to international threats, which are woefully unregulated, as you suggest, the shark fin trade is rampant, long-lining bycatch. Bycatch, even our drift gillnet fishery in Southern California are capturing young, and they're exempted from taking white sharks.
In fact, just also talking about the environmental things, in addition to mercury, young great white sharks are about in Southern California, at least, are six times higher to have the mercury levels of other ocean fish. You've got DDT, you've got PCBs. I mean, pollution, climate change, there are just so many factors here. What will being listed as an endangered species do about all that?
Well, I guess we can control what we can, and one of the big ones is trying to recognize that this is an important species and that we need to study it more. We need to try to add safeguards that we can control. Clearly, ocean acidification is something that we're not going to address in this protecting this population. That's far greater than that we can do here. But what we can do is look at the fisheries, look at the bycatch, look at the way the fishery is affecting species, look at international impacts on the sharks, but also recognizing that these subpopulations are extremely vulnerable to direct impact. So critical habitat is tied in with the Endangered Species Act. So we might be able to make some better decisions, particularly in the Southern California Bight, that might impact these and other species less.
And again, David McGuire with us by phone is marine biologist and founder of Shark Stewards Nonprofit, one of the environmental groups which filed a petition to be to put the great white shark in this area of the Pacific on the endangered species list. Martin Nemec is National Endangered Species Act listing coordinator with the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, and she joins us by phone this morning as well. Ms. Nemec, good to have you aboard here. Welcome.
Oh, hi. Thank you, Michael.
Thank you. Well, first of all, talk about the process of getting listed. What goes into the criteria?
Well, let's see. The Endangered Species Act lays out a clear, transparent, and public process for carefully considering species and whether they're in danger of extinction or likely to become endangered within the foreseeable future. Those are the two definitions for threatened and endangered. So once we receive a petition to list a species, we must make a finding on whether the petition presents substantial scientific or commercial information indicating that the petition to action may be warranted, and then promptly publish that in the Federal Register. And we can also review information that's readily available in our files, and we make the announcement within 90 days of receiving the petition to the maximum extent that's practical. So that's not a hard and fast deadline, but we try to get there on 90 days. Sometimes we're petitioned to list a population, as in this case. And in that case, we have to first look to see whether the petitioned entity is a species eligible for listing under the Endangered Species Act. So in this case, the Northeast Pacific population is one portion of the global range. We have a joint policy with Fish and Wildlife Service that we issued in 1996 that has two criteria to meet in order to be a population that warrants listing, and that is discreteness and significance. And the petition discusses those and factors that might help meet those criteria. After considering whether a petition entity qualifies as a species, we then evaluate whether the scientific and commercial information indicates that the species is at risk of becoming extinct. So we look at species status and trends or information describing threats to the species. Now, court decisions...
Excuse me, this is sounding like a long process.
Maybe you want to ask questions and I answer short ones, but yeah, that's a very long process. That's one thing to actually point out.
Well, half of them could die out by the time this process is. Well, I don't mean to make light of this, but seriously, we're talking about a long process.
Briefly, if we did accept the petition within 90 days, we would initiate a status review, and that allows us to study the best available information and decide whether the population meets endangered or threatened status within a year from the date of receipt of that petition. And if at that point we decide it does qualify as threatened or endangered, we would propose to list the species as threatened or endangered and have a public comment period, address all those comments, and have it peer-reviewed as well, the report that goes into that. And then another year from the date of that proposed rule, if we decided it was still likely to become endangered in the foreseeable future, or...
Let me cut to the chase here. Does it mean that there would be, in the case of the great white shark, research about that population and research to restore that population as a result of their being listed?
Certainly listing a species helps helps attract research funds, and it also allows federal agencies to consult with us on actions that might affect the listed species, such as fisheries managed under the Magnuson-Stevens Conservation Act, or contaminants. If there's an EPA, Environmental Protection Agency connection, that would be a federal nexus that would allow us to them to consult with us.
So bottom line is it would enhance the likelihood of research. That's really what I'm getting at.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. Again, Martha Namek is National Endangered Species Act Listing Coordinator, and she's with the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration. And many thanks for joining us on Forum this morning, Ms. Namek.
You're welcome.
I want to get John McCosker, our friend from the California Academy of Sciences, senior scientist and chair of the Department of Aquatic Biology, who is with us in, I'm still reeling from this, Last Chance, Idaho. Could that be true, John?
Yes, it is, Michael, but we still have telephone unless we get hit by lightning.
I can't even imagine what I'm trying to conjure up in my limited and admittedly impoverished imagination where they got the name Last Chance, Idaho. But I want to really get to this whole question of the great white sharks with you. And I know that you're not so keen on putting them on the endangered species list, but if they are clearly endangered, and if it's going to mean the likelihood of more research, why not?
Well, I suggest that if they are deserving of it, either as endangered or threatened, they most certainly should be on the list. And I'm just not convinced that it has yet been demonstrated, so more research will demonstrate that. I share David McGuire's concern, as well as others, that this is such an important species, it's a keystone species, that were we to be wrong and not protect it at this time and lose it, the consequences would be very, very dramatic. So I sort of take what the economists would consider the precautionary principle, and let's make sure that the risk is very reduced rather than enlarged.
Aren't you also concerned that once it gets on the list, it's difficult to do research?
Oh, certainly. Yes, it is. And that's not my primary concern, but it is a concern that many biologists have voiced about other species, and that is that although well-meaning in its intent, the act makes it difficult to demonstrate by tagging, by removing animals, examining animals, whatever one does to do this without a lot of preparation and permissions. So what I would hope is that we can figure out exactly what the dangers are through the bycatch and fishing and see if, in fact, their numbers are being reduced.
And what about the dangers of sharks? I mean, a lot of people's hackles go up when they think of sharks and all of the violence is associated with sharks. Like I said earlier, Peter Benchley, we have to thank for a lot of that, Jaws, the novel and movie. But, you know, there have been shark attacks, and you've done a lot of research on shark attacks.
Yes, I have. And most certainly, if we attempt to have political comment and individual comment on this at the same time that someone is bitten by a shark, you can imagine what a circus that becomes. And it'll happen. I mean, 'tis the season right now, August, September, October. That is when white sharks accidentally encounter human beings, and as a result of that, it'll become political theater rather than our concern about saving a real important keystone species. Having said all of that, you know, millions of sharks are dying every year, and as many as 20 or 30 human beings are dying inadvertently every year, not by white sharks, but by all sharks. So I cautious in making the action appropriate and timely, and fearful that one shark attack can foul up the entire basis of decision.
Again, John McCosker, senior scientist and chair of the Department of Aquatic Biology with the California Academy of Sciences, with us from Last Chance, Idaho. And you can be with us as well from wherever you're listening to Forum. Our toll-free number is available to you, and you may want to weigh in on this. Great white sharks are disappearing from California waters and should be protected under the U.S. Endangered Species Act. That's according to a petition that was filed by three environmental groups. And we're talking about the proposal, finding out what is threatening the sharks. Should they be on the endangered species list? And, well, you may want to opine on the dangers of sharks, not only to sharks, but to people. Our toll-free number is available. It's 866-733-6786, should you care to join us. And we do welcome your phone calls. Again, that number, 866-733-6786, or email us, forum@kqed.org, or post any questions or comments you have on our website by going to kqed.org/forum and clicking on this segment. Or you can also join us, of course, going to Facebook page. Let me go to our callers, and let's begin, Steve, with you. Good morning.
Hello, is that me?
If you're Steve, that's you.
Mate, there's plenty of Steves in the world, but this is me too. I'm visiting your country from Australia, and I found this discussion fascinating. I don't know whether your listeners are aware, but in the waters of the Great Australian Bight, and particularly Western Australia, off Perth, the great white shark is prolific. In fact, this year, from my recollection, there's been about three or four fatalities from attacks from great whites. So they're not... They're not scarce. They're almost in plague proportions. In fact, the talkback radio debate going on now in that part of the world is questioning whether, in fact, they're removed from the protection list and culled.
Well, how do you want to weigh in on this from the down under perspective, Steve? I'd be interested to know what your opinion is.
I'm just perplexed as why there is an issue with the numbers in the waters off California. There must be some other reason. I can tell you they are in prolific proportions in the western part of Australia. In fact, they're so bad that people think twice about entering the water on a surfboard to surf.
See, I think that's, in fact, part of the great concern here for the great white shark. Why have those numbers dwindled so much in this genetically distinct group here in this region? And would being on the endangered species list help, or could we get more data by keeping it off the endangered species list? That's really at the heart of what we're discussing here. And let me go to more of your calls. We'll go to Mark next. Mark, you're on.
Why have those numbers dwindled so much in this genetically distinct group here in this region? And help, or could we get more data by keeping it off?
Yeah, Mark, you got to turn down your radio. Well, actually, while you're doing that... David McGuire, I'd like to hear your response to what John McCosker said. You know, maybe there's a precautionary principle here, and maybe there's no need to list a great white at this point, and we need more data.
Well, I don't think I'm in disagreement with John, who I respect greatly. I think the precautionary principle works in the other way, that we need to be more cautious before they go extinct. That, yes, we do need more data, but while that's happening, as you said, this whole Endangered Species Act will last a year or longer. In the meantime, we're losing sharks every year in the Southern California fishery and adults in the offshore fisheries and even in poaching for their jaws and their teeth. So there's really a bounty out for these sharks. They're highly valued on the international market, and they're in very low numbers. And I'd like to address the Australians' comment. And there's statistical abundance or statistical variations in shark attacks, and John is the expert on this, but there are years when you have more incidents of human interactions, and then there are fewer. And off of Australia, there has been an uptick, and it's very unfortunate to have any loss of human life, but the fact is that there are millions of more people accessing the water, especially in Australia. We have no population estimates off Australia that I've been able to find, but what they're doing is they're following the prey along the coastline where humans are entering the water. So we're not seeing a plague of sharks. What we're seeing is that more people are having an encounter with sharks who are doing their normal thing and following the migratory patterns of their prey items.
But getting back for the moment, David, to the sharks in this region, it's my understanding that they are indeed the most contaminated sharks in the world, and no one really knows why.
Well, we know why. They're apex predators, so they biomagnify or bioconcentrate contaminants. And, you know, a recent study shows that they're among the highest in mercury, as are all apex predators, all sharks, swordfish, tuna. They bioconcentrate mercury.
Yeah, but six times as much, isn't it? Excuse me, six times as much of mercury?
Yes, extremely high.
Higher mercury levels than any other ocean fish. Period.
Right, exactly. So... Well, you know, we think about that when we're consuming them because methylmercury is toxic to humans, especially women of reproductive age. But think about what it's doing to the sharks. I mean, this is a vertebrate also. It has enzyme production. These heavy metals and organics are affecting the health and welfare of these organisms' survival.
Let me bring more of our callers on. And Adrian, you're on with us. Good morning. Welcome to the program.
Good morning. My comment is, you know, you're talking about a species that's been on the planet well before we set foot on the planet as, you know, as human beings. And we're invading their environment. They're just doing what nature has decided that they're going to do. So it's not as if they have a constant, you know, brain that says, okay, I'm going to decide not to eat this guy who's got his feet dangling in the water. So, and you can study it all day long. And the problem is, once the species gets extinct, you can never bring it back.
Which prompts me to ask you, Adrian, if you're essentially saying we need the great whites on the most endangered species list.
Yes.
Unequivocally.
Unequivocally.
Yeah. Okay. I thank you for the call. And, well, we're going to hear from some more of you, and let me go to Michael in Brentwood next. Michael, you're on. Good morning.
Good morning. I had a two-part question. First, from purely a money standpoint, is there a big cost to putting an animal on the endangered species list? The reason I'm asking is, if it's not much of a cost in terms of administrating it or enforcing it, well, what's the big deal? Put them on the endangered species list. The second part of my question is, if a lot of the things killing great white sharks are global phenomenon, like ocean acidification, things like this, well, I don't see what putting them on the endangered species list will do in terms of really protecting them, because these kind of problems require global solutions, not simply preventing people from killing the animal. And I'll take my answers off the air.
All right, we thank you for those questions, Michael. And David McGuire, let me go back to you on this. Do you know about, or can you speak to the cost of a species being on the endangered list?
Well, most of the cost is going to be people's salaries who are already getting paid, so Fish and Wildlife and Fish and Game. There's the actual process of the review, or people are already going to be reviewing, so that's kind of a built-in. There are really no additional costs until it actually gets listed, and then there may be some reallocation of government resources towards studying the population or even looking at some critical habitat establishments, so doing some analysis into what the fishing impacts are, some of these other impacts, and maybe how to do either seasonal or some other kind of protections for areas that are, like the Farallon Islands, that are extremely important.
And what about the caller's point, though, that these are really global problems that we're talking about here with commercial fishing and with ocean acidification, those kinds of things?
Yeah, and it touches on your early comments on threats. We can only control what we can control, and this is one of the factors. This is actually a key factor. One of the things is bycatch. We really should have a zero-take limit on white sharks. Other factors are, we don't really know what the reproductive biology is that well in these sharks. So really trying to apply more interest and study of these organisms is going to help protect them better and manage them. It's not hard to delist a species off the Endangered Species Act. We did it with the gray whales. They had a great comeback. And now they're off the Endangered Species Act. So, again, applying the precautionary principle, in my view, would be, let's act cautiously. We know it's suggested that there's around 300 of these animals off our coastline, the adults and subadults. We need to protect them, because it's very easy to lose them to, especially in international waters, which are more difficult to control.
Of course, this could also, the petition that you filed, lead to other petitions, maybe even a cascade of them with other members of the same species, right?
Other members of the same?
Well, other sharks in other regions and so forth, yeah.
Well, one would hope, actually.
In North and Central America, sharks face extinction too.
There are many species of sharks. One-third of the pelagic species are threatened with extinction. Unfortunately, those are living in international boundaries that are more difficult to control. That's under, you know, CITES and other, like hammerheads, for example. They deserve greater protections. But there's a lot of lobbying against international protections, because people are making an extraordinary amount of money, either on the fishery, the direct commercial fishery, like tuna, or the shark fin trade.
By the way, David McGuire with us from Southern California is a marine biologist and founder of Shark Stewards. And I should ask you, David, since you're down there and Shark Week is going on, which is a big deal, what's the real magnet? What's the draw there for Shark Week? I mean, people are fascinated by them, obviously, but you draw in lots and lots of people, don't you?
Well, sharks resonate in our psyche. They're predators. They frighten us. We want to survive. So I think in our genetics, as any animal wants to survive, we're naturally afraid of and thrilled by predators. But as John said, the risk is very low, and actually the survival rate is very high. We love sharks, and actually, John, to address John's concern about the people who are afraid of sharks, I was just on a Shark Week last night called Shark Fight, and it's all about shark attack victims turned advocates. So I think maybe we're turning around our attention and our that fear and ignorance that sharks are bloodthirsty man-eaters and that they're essential for a healthy ocean ecosystem. And we're learning every day. There are scientific studies that are produced each year indicating how important these predators are for maintaining the health and balance of the ocean ecosystems.
Well, apropos of that, I'm sorry, David, what did you say?
Including the fish we like to eat. If you like salmon, we want white sharks to regulate a blossoming sea lion population. So if you're a fisherman, it benefits us to have a white shark population.
Yeah, I think you've just maybe answered the question from a listener named Charles who says that you've described the great white sharks are a key species in the oceans. Why? What would be the practical effect of the extinction of these sharks? Essentially, that's pretty much what you've just loaded down for or bore down on, isn't it?
Yeah, the apex predators, there's a number of studies that demonstrated that sharks maintain the balance of the system, and if you remove sharks from the system, you have a cascade effect that affects every tier in the food chain, all the way down to the fundamental part of that food web, really. So by maintaining the health of those mesopredators, the middle predators, you're maintaining the health of the algivores, the animals that are down at the lower part of the food chain, so everything is controlled. You remove that top of the food chain and you get this cascade. It's a house of cards. The whole thing topples.
I don't want to make this, we've got only a few seconds left here, in a kind of a spotted owl debate or anything like that, and we can't connect back with John McCosker because the Last Chance Idaho phone lines are wanting. But I'm just wondering about the fact, I mean, I think John and others think that the great white are coming back, that maybe it's too soon to be on the endangered
species. Well, you know, there is a feeling of a researcher down in Southern California who's studying them, but so far, that's anecdotal. We don't really have strong evidence, but we do know that the adult population is very low, and they're most vulnerable. So until we have strong evidence that the population is coming back and that it's strong and it's at a level that can maintain itself with current threats, we need to protect it.
That's David McGuire with us from Southern California, marine biologist and founder of Shark Stewards Nonprofit, one of the environmental groups that filed the petition to put the great white shark of this region on the endangered species list. We were also joined by John McCosker, senior scientist and chair of the Department of Aquatic Biology with California Academy of Sciences, and Martha Namek, National Endangered Species Act listing coordinator with the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration. We're here with you Monday through Friday, 9 to 11, an hour repeat at 10 to 11 in the evening. Our senior editor is Dan Zoll, and our producers are Judy Campbell and Amanda Stupai. Our engineer is Danny Bringer, and our executive producer is Raul Ramirez. Stay tuned for another hour of Forum. I'm Michael Krasny.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio, the Germanicos Foundation, and the Generosity Foundation in honor of Louise and Claude Rosenberg, and by a generous gift from Jan Schrem and Maria Minetti Schrem, owners of Clos Pegase Winery, who believe that all people deserve access to education, information, and culture for a lifetime of exploration and learning.